Hello, everyone. Welcome to Cricket with an Accent. This is your host, Saqib Ali. Today, we will be going a bit out of realm or zone of the game of cricket. But I can guarantee to all the listeners here, this is a very interesting conversation that's about to unpack itself. And I have two fathers joining me. Deepak Rao from UK, who's been a good supporter of the Cricket with an Accent podcast. He's here to talk about the sporting journey of his daughter, Aditi Rao, as Deepak and his wife are along the journey, as many parents would do. And also joining is one of my close friends from the Boston suburbs, Khwaja Ahmad Hussain, who's embarked on a similar journey with his wife for their son, Farzad, who is one of the better pitchers in the game of baseball in his age group. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show. It's an honor kind of invading your private world. I kind of know you both in different respects, but this is going to be an interesting subject, and hopefully the listeners here can take away, even though we may not be talking cricket, but I'm sure a cricketing parent is probably going through a similar exercise, be it UK, India, or wherever they're doing this. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Saqib. Good to talk here.
Thank you, Saqib. It's a privilege and a joy every time I interact with you, but this is a special podcast. I never imagined that I would be talking about my son, but I hope to talk about my experience as a dad as I'm living it through my son's journey.
Sure. So again, you know, like I'm a bigger tennis fan than I think every one of my listeners knows, and I can say that on a cricket podcast and still retain my cricket listenership. It's no secret. So if I even look at tennis as an example, and a lot of these questions may come to Deepak later on because Aditi is playing a sport. It's an individual sport, so tennis is more similar in some respects. So when we hear champions speak at the podium or press conference, be it a famous champion, be it a first timer, they start thanking their team, their coach, their physio, the crowd, but then it's also the spouse, and of course, last but not least, the parents, because that's where the journey starts. So same question right now. There'll be a lot similar question than maybe some different ones. So Deepak, you can go first. How did this this love affair for your daughter start with the sport of squash? Did you play at some level? How did the Rao family get into this?
Well, I played squash before Aditi just once at a local club with my friend, just to get the taste of it. I was more growing up, I was more of a badminton player. I wouldn't say player, but you know, I used to play badminton a bit. But squash, only I've only a passing interest. Obviously, I used to read The Hindu when I was growing up. So, you know, if you read The Hindu when you're growing up, you get exposed to a lot of sports. You hear all these you know, Jahangir Khans and Sher Khans and all these people. So, you know, you know what the sport is about. You know how it's played. You know, basically know the rules as to, you know, how it goes about. But I had no special interest in squash. There was this just to reiterate how much interest I had. Aditi was actually a few months into her junior career. She was playing in her first British Open. This was under 11s, and there was this it was under 13s. There was this gentleman who came and said, "Oh, you know, you're playing well. You didn't give up and all that." And she had lost the match. And I was like, "Yeah, whatever." You know, yeah, as a parent, if someone loses badly to Aditi, I also go and, you know, say some. Thing, you know, play well played and all that and stuff. So I was thinking it's the same thing. But another person came and said, "Oh, that is, do you know who that is?" And I said, "No, that's Al Sharbagi's coach." I said, "Who's that?" So he was the world number one at the time. So I had absolutely nothing to do with squash. We moved into a new house and the furniture was coming in a bit. So I had two tennis rackets, I had a softball. So I got Aditi to hit against the wall, and I could see that she was actually committed to get to the ball, which is the first thing you want to see in a kid in any sport. So I knew that there was some interest in actually hitting it. And that's how we started. So because of my badminton background, so I could actually hit the ball quite well, forehand and backhand. And the first thing I told her was, if the ball's on your right, it's on the forehand. If it's on the left, turn your wrist, and it's a backhand. So that's where the journey started. So in a local club, and when we look at the videos from then, you just kids say, "I'm just amazed at the journey that she's come through." Yeah. That's how it started.
Well, it's really interesting. So I'm the same question for you. I know you didn't love baseball. So where did Farzad's love for the game come from? Was it at school or watching the Red Sox? What transpired this?
It was very interesting. I had played some cricket. I had moved into a new house, pretty much like Deepak. I had seen our neighbor play catch with his son. I didn't realize at the time when we'd moved here that his son was actually in a high school team. I thought they were just having fun as father and son. We both went to the store. And when you take your child to the sports goods store, it's always like a candy store. I just relive my memories of being a child in that store. And we bought ourselves gloves and a baseball. He started throwing, and then I started realizing that the ball was hitting my glove much harder than I would expect a six-year-old to. It was not about formal baseball. It was not about playing baseball. It was not about anything. It was just playing catch. We had a backyard and we were having fun. And then his mother signed him up for the spring season. And I have to admit that it was not through school. It was not through any magic. It was because Nahida, his mom, decided that he should be playing baseball because he talks a lot about baseball. The Red Sox were doing that well at that time. And he used to listen to the radio about the Red Sox winning, and they won the World Series. I think it was in 2018, which is about the time he started. And then when he got signed up, thanks to the Little League, which is a completely volunteer-run organization, which was fantastic. I don't think he would have played baseball, or we would have been a baseball family without the volunteer coaches and everyone else who helped him understand the game. They recognized that he had a good arm. As soon as he got to the team, they made him a pitcher. He didn't know what a mound was. They said, "You're on the mound." He said, "What does that mean?" I still have pictures, and I treasure those pictures where he's standing behind the rubber. A pitcher usually is in front of the rubber to get as much distance towards the batter, but he's behind the rubber and throwing the ball, and he was throwing strikes. And when his mother heard from another mother saying, "Your son is throwing strikes," he had no idea what strikes meant. We had no idea what baseball was. He did really well, and we thought the season ended towards the end of May, early June, around Father's Day. And then I got an email from his coach saying he's on the All-Stars team. I said, "What does that mean? I thought the season ended." Went to the All-Stars. I happened to get friendly with a dad whose son had been playing some level of baseball before that, and said, "You should put him in travel baseball." I said, "What is that?" I had no idea what I was getting into. Next thing I know, I, you know, had him try out for, I don't think I remember going for that. I think his mother went for that. We were not sure what to make of it. He got on a club team, did well on a club team. Though in the initial years, he was doing well, but we didn't know what doing well was. We didn't know how to prepare. We thought season started in March. He starts in March. Now it's a very different level of preparation as a 14-year-old who's getting into high school, and the competition is very different. So that's our baseball journey. It was almost by accident that he fell into baseball. He took it himself from there, and he's really worked hard at it and enjoys it. So we spend a lot of time working on it now, but it's a very, very different thing from when we started.
So again, listenership, you both are in UK and US. So Emil, I'm going to stick with you one more question. You use the word Little League. I have some idea. Again, I've never paid attention to baseball much myself. We've used baseball fields to play cricket in the early 2000s. So if a listener is, you know, listening from India or other parts of the world where baseball is not a featured sport, is Little League something that schools participate, or is like a private league? What is Little League here?
I think it's very interesting because it's a separate organization. So Little League, it turns out, is all over the world. But in the United States, every town organizes its league. It's called the Little League, and every town has its own Little League. So we in Shrewsbury have the Shrewsbury Little League. It starts around age 5 or 6. It's called T-ball, where literally kids have no idea what they're doing. And it progresses and it ends at age 12. This is not affiliated with the school. It is usually affiliated with towns. So each town, or if there's not enough kids in a town, there are two or three different towns. It's 100% volunteer organization at the town level. Moms, dads on the softball side, on the baseball side, volunteer to coach. They have umpires. It's a full league that is run. The league eventually builds up to the 12U team. The 12U team in town represents the districts. The districts go on to represent the states. And there's a Little League World Series that happens in Williamsburg, Pennsylvania, every year. It's a feature that all kids look forward to and hope to be at some point.
Interesting. No, I think this kind of sets the stage for a listener because we are used to the cricket vocabulary. So Deepak, I'm sure you have a lot of points already because journeys are similar, sports are different.
Yeah.
So my question is, when Aditi and you already gave a little introduction. So where does the squash fit in the schooling system in UK? From far, I don't think it's probably anywhere close to football or cricket and maybe even tennis. So fill us in. Where does this fit in the schooling ecosystem? If someone has to take it seriously as Aditi does, what are the options? If it's not school, where does she train? And talk us through if there's something like a little league. Maybe it's a team sport, but yeah, we are all very curious.
Well, I think Ahmed's son's journey was a bit more structured. But as when Aditi started playing, she was playing mostly with me. I have no squash background. So I was looking for other kids that played squash in the area or in the county even. And there was nobody. So we decided actually to go and play in a tournament, an England squash run tournament. Now, we don't know how this thing works. So just before the tournament's usually on the weekend, Saturday or Sunday. So I think on a Wednesday, my wife takes her to a local coach and tells him, she's never played competitively before, so we put her in this tournament. And she was 8 at the time, and there were no girls in under-11s. So they were going to play her in the under-13s. So as it is, it was a huge step up. In squash, in my head, you could always serve from either side of the court. Then it transpired that you can start from any side of the court, but then you actually switch ends every time you get a point. So we didn't know that. We didn't know that how to spin to start the game, like a toss. Yeah, so that was all taught by that coach there. So it was just very basic. And obviously, she didn't do too well in the tournament either. But it was all an eye-opener. So that's how we start. And our initial few months as a competitive squash player after COVID was coached by me to say that just because she's a, because I'm a very tall man, I'm 6'4", and my daughter is also quite tall. So she was much taller for her age group. So all I told her was that just smash the ball. And in that age group, she won quite a few tournaments by just smashing the ball without any proper technique. It was all good. But, obviously now it's more structured. Talking about the Little League, we have something called a Squash Stars, which I wasn't aware of at the time. So we didn't go through that system. So Squash Stars is basically England Squash sponsoring some kids to come and play. They'll give free rackets and some squash balls and grips and all that. But we had no idea about that at the time. So it was just went in blindly. Just go in. I mean, I just wanted her to play a sport, any sport. And in the school system, I don't think squash, some of the posh private schools do have squash, but they have the inter-school tournaments every year as well. But none of the girls or boys that win there actually do too well in the England squash competition. So I don't think they take the sport seriously in schools at all. And I don't think they've much of a tennis culture in schools either. It's mostly football, rugby, cricket, and netball. So Aditi is a reasonably good netball player too, and I've heard that from a PE reports that cricket batting skills are quite good. Obviously, hand-eye coordination, etc. So that helps. These days it's very structured. So we are also looking at getting a strength and conditioning coach now. So it's progressed a bit.
Absolutely, and structure in my humble viewpoint, what you guys are doing, and of course it's your kids, so you have to be vested and you want to give them the best chance. Maybe for the journey, I don't want to say we'll get to it if there's pressure for a certain destination, but let's talk about the structure and the process. So I'm going to stick with Deepak and come back to you, Ahmed. So, and I'm going to use Ahmed as a baseline because a lot of times in the past, we don't live close by Deepak. So we try to make plans. I don't have, you know, my kid doesn't play any sport at this level. So Ahmed always says it's a baseball season. And, you know, we try to catch up on a weekend, but then he's traveling. So walk me through the process part. As a family, right? Your wife probably involved. You guys, Vijay has made some announcements on Twitter that you know, Aditi has done some, you know, travel across Europe to play tournaments. But behind the scenes is practice. So how has that altered the rhythm of your daily life? When I'm sure you're managing academics. She's going to school. She's also probably getting good grades. So how does this fit? And what have you learned as a family to you know, set your life with this kind of a priority? I'm very interested to know that.
Yeah, well, before I get to that, I think I have to have a special word about my wife because she has absolutely no interest in sport before Aditi picked up squash. Now, in the squash parent circus, they call her the oracle because she knows everything about every player, especially the girls that play in England and in Europe. So, well, not everyone in Europe, but everyone in England that plays any age group, she knows the results on the back of her hand. So she's that good now. So, you know, everyone comes to her and ask her about, you know, if they're playing an opponent that they haven't played recently, they'll come and ask her opinion about how she's, what her last good results was. And, you know, or maybe they'll even ask her some technical questions as to, you know, what do you think is her weakness? And does she run? One of the things with squash is that, you know, you have to be very, very fit. So, you know, there's no, like in tennis, if the ball goes behind, the rally is not over. So the ball can come back for the back wall. So the rallies are much, much longer. So, you know, you have to be really fit. So there are some players who are actually not great at any shot execution. They are very good at covering the court. So, you know, whatever shot you hit, they are very good at getting the ball back. So that can, you know, be very irritating for a player who's actually hit a very good shot because the ball has come back. So she knows all of that now, most of them, especially in Aditi's age group. She knows almost every girl that strengths and weaknesses. But our daily routine is, I think Aditi's academics has got some sort of discipline because of her squash, because she comes home, does her homework, revision, etc. And then we are invariably in a squash court. So she has one-to-one coaching thrice a week, twice in Winchester, which is half an hour to the south of Newbury, where we live, and once in Abingdon, which is half an hour to the north of Newbury, where we live. So they're all... her coach in Winchester was the former world number 130. And her coach in Abingdon, in Oxfordshire, was the national coach of the Guernsey team, which is one of the Channel Islands. And he took the Guernsey team to the Commonwealth Games in Delhi in 2010. So they are, you know, we've got good caliber of coaching. They're very good. They have got a good relationship, etc. So 3 days coaching, and usually my wife tries to set a match for Aditi, usually after the coaching, because we don't want her to tire herself out before the coaching. But after the coaching, she's in a good hitting rhythm. So it's always results are much better after a training session with the coaches. Then she also plays three county leagues, you know, with men. So there are usually matches, at least one match every week, or sometimes two matches a week. And then there is usually an England squash tournament over the weekend. This month is a bit quieter after the England Junior closed last weekend. So I think ever since she's picked up sport, I think our lives have got better. You know, it's got a bit hectic. Our social life is different now. Our social life is is less with the friends that we had pre-squash. It's more with the other parents like us. We meet in every squash tournament, so we hang around with them. We go to you know, cafes, or, you know, have a drink in the pub or whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah, so the social life is different because we are not the only parents who are doing this. Other parents, and we meet them every other week. So the parents are on WhatsApp, so we usually have a...
Is there an opportunity cost in childhood? Like, does she miss out on hanging out with friends, go catch a film or hang out?
Yes and no. So she's got a squash friends, and she hangs out with them. Obviously, there are some summer parties or Christmas parties that she's missed. because she's got to win a tournament. There's some parties that she's missed, birthday parties that she's missed. But, you know, she also enjoys the fact that, I think silently, she enjoys the fact that she's got a bit of attention in school. So they always have about something about her in the school website or school Facebook socials, etc. She is seen as a star in the school. So I think she enjoys the attention. I mean, you know, she's quite modest about it, but I do think that she, as everyone should, you know, it's not a, yeah. So, but I think, yeah, there is that thing that she misses out on some parties, but she has other friends as well. You know, she's got good friends at school, good friends outside school, good friends in the Indian community. So she's doing okay.
No, that's good. And believe me, the attention is all earned. So yeah, good for her.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I tell her when she gets a bit sheepish, I said, you know, there's sometimes when the principal announces something in the assembly, they're saying that she won the Spanish Open, she gets really red and all that. But yeah. You know, it's all good.
It is all good.
Yeah.
So, Emma, Deepak made a brilliant point that her academics, in Aditi's case, there's a certain discipline that comes from sport. So I think you and I have talked about this, that even if really... I don't want to put a cap on it, even if Farzad doesn't even play, if his interest stops in baseball, and you said you would not push him. But still, I think playing an organized sport brings in certain, I think, traits, which is discipline. And then you also know on a given day you are not the best, because these are like certain humbling things that sport teaches you. So let's talk about that quickly, based on what Deepak said, and then also follow up my original question. How has this process altered you and your wife's lifestyle, and what's an opportunity cost in your case? What do you end up giving up to gain something for Farzad?
Yeah, I think that's a, especially being a South Asian parent in a Western country, academics have to come first. It feels like, but fortunately for us, his academics have always been strong, and we have a clear implicit understanding that if his academics are in good standing and he's excelling, because he can, that's his capacity, and I want him to reach his capacity as far as academics are concerned. As far as he's excelling, I'm all good about, you know, all the sports and the effort that we make as a family and he makes as an individual to get to where he needs to get to. I think academics are important, but it is a fact that him and some of his other friends who participate in different sports are really good about getting their work done, because they recognize that there is, at least in his school, there is no free pass for not getting your work done, for not excelling. I keep joking that while, you know, baseball is a 2-3 season sport for him, math is a full year sport. So he's a mathlete too. So he competes in math competitions, and that can also get grueling at times. So he's had to decide which competition he goes to. Usually not baseball and math, because they don't overlap. It's the basketball season that overlaps with the math season. So that's an important part of his life. I think the other part is, yes, being a child. He's still a child. He needs to have his experience. He still puts the trash out on Thursday night. He is, on some days, making his breakfast or dinner, depending on what the meal is. He's a part of the household. He gets the laundry done on Fridays. So there are those aspects of being a child. But the other aspects of being a child, you know, hanging out with friends, while he's not hanging out as much, especially when there's season and practice, he does do quite a bit of that in the summer. In fact, today he's out with a buddy. Today's his rest day. There's no baseball talk today. It's a friend from second grade that they're still very good friends, and they hang out for most of the day. That's a part of growing up, and that should be a part of growing up. Coming back to the question of how it changes our life in terms of the rhythm of the family. When there is season, when there is practice, lights out very early, and we have to wake up early, very, very early, sometimes at 5:30, to get to a game at 8 o'clock, because we are starting warm-up at 8 o'clock for a 9 o'clock game. And sometimes these places are an hour and a half away. It takes discipline. It shows if he doesn't sleep well. It shows if he doesn't eat well. So there is a rhythm of sleep. There is a rhythm of, what he eats, how he eats, when he eats. There is a rhythm of getting him to practice. It takes a lot of coordination. It's not easy as a family to juggle full-time jobs, school, sport, but that's what he enjoys. That's what we've decided to prioritize, which means something has to give somewhere. That's a trade-off we have to make as a family. And our trade-off is, I think we've eliminated several social events that we would attend as a family that we don't. Either we take turns to attend, depending on who needs to go, or we decide not to go and decline those invites. It puts you in a little bit of a bind, especially when you have to go to some events. There are some events you cannot miss. Then he stays home. We go, come back. He gets his, routine done. He gets his dinner taken care of, and then he's in bed by the time we get back home. That's how we've tried to manage it. It is a sacrifice, but I would call it a trade-off. It's something he's willing to do, and it's something that he has noticed that it makes a difference. As a family, we have decided that that's the right thing for us to do, and that's what we go with. Deepak is right that there are other families doing this. Summer tournaments become your summer vacations. Your weekends, you finish the game, and then 1:30 is lunchtime, and you're hungry. So what do? You all go out to the same place. Your rhythms are totally in tune, whereas rhythms with the other social part of your previous life are not so much in tune. So it works, but it works in a very different way.
Are there days, Ahmed, when he doesn't want to go for practice? I mean, if there is an example, do you skip it, or you do you remind we have to do it, or it's not even happened once?
I can't recall a day when he said he didn't want to go to baseball practice. There are days when, he's pushing himself too hard. I think he should be proud of it, but there are days when I'm going to say, "Hey, you need to skip it today. It's not worth it." It's rare that he says, I don't feel like going. That's a good thing. Especially with, I think at this level, motivation is not something that you can push, encourage, inculcate. It has to come from within, as a teenager. And if it doesn't come, it's really hard.
Same question for you, Deepak. Again, this is more like spontaneous since now I have the flow going. And I tend to ask some spontaneous ones. But are there days for Aditi when she says, I don't want to do it, or I would rather do what other girls are doing? No practice, don't feel like it. If it happens, how do you tackle it?
It's not mostly about what other girls are doing or not, but it's mostly if she's had a double PE in school, for instance, and they have been in the sun and playing netball, or she's represented a school in a netball team, and gone out or have a match of rounders, as it happened last summer in under the sun, and then she has to go and train hard. Then there is, I wouldn't say pushback, but you could sense that she doesn't want to do it. So we still sort of do it, but we tell her coach that can the drills be something different because she's a bit tired. So maybe they concentrate more on the short game rather than do the long rails to the back of the court. Just hone a technique rather than have some match play or something like that. So. But there are days when she doesn't want to be on court because she's too tired, and we see that she's too tired. We try and I would say we try and negotiate with her because as Ahmed said, it has to come from within. But sometimes I think it's less this year now that she's more, well, she's 1 year older. But it was when she started off, it was getting a bit too much sometimes. So she wasn't doing every day of the week at the time either. So Wednesdays would be a bit tough because she would have double PE in school, especially in the spring and summer months. And then come home, drive half an hour, play squash, so that It was sometimes a bit too much, but I think she recognizes that now. And it was interesting when Emma said about they know what to eat, etc. There's this match that she played in Sheffield. It was an early morning match, 9:30, 10, and she had a very light breakfast despite her advice. I think she had some beans, and so we are vegetarians, so she doesn't. So the only protein she gets is from milk, I suppose, in an English breakfast. So she didn't have a lot of breakfast. She played a long match with one of her peers, one of her best friends, who she usually beat before then. She lost in five games, and you could see at the end that she was more tired than the other girl, which is why she lost. And one of the lessons learned from that was that she has to have a banana before a match or something. So since then she's not said no to a banana, if and she doesn't like bananas, but she's got there now. So
Interesting. How does she take a tough loss? Because does she get the big picture? I mean, it's still a process.
No,
If
she
she's
doesn't
so
get the
good.
big. No, she doesn't get the big picture. So. It's still a process. Sometimes she's expected to lose, so which is all right. Then we look at her scores, if she's taken a game off her opponent, and sometimes the pressure is always when she's expected to win, obviously, and then she doesn't do well. Sometimes when it's also not good when she's expected to win easily, but her opponent stretches her. So she's also someone who doesn't like to watch her own games. We want her to watch her own games, fix her faults, etc. But she's not got to the stage where she's self-analyzing that much. She's got better at it. I think there was a time where, well, I should say I've also got better at this because there was a time where I was trying to remote control a match, trying to tell her that you probably have to hit this shot at this time and this and don't play this shot at this time, etc. Now I've left to awares. So I only point out, or even my wife only points out when it's something that's obviously incorrect. So we leave it to her as to what shot she chooses. So the pressure's off a bit. I think it's a better arrangement. Hopefully the results will show for it. And I think that will also. I wouldn't say we were being pushy or anything, but I think we were getting too involved with. I think she knows the game better than us. So when she's on court, especially sports like squash, because you're watching, because both the opponent, unlike in tennis, you don't see your opponent in squash most of the time because your opponent's usually behind you at the tee or in front of you. So it's not the same view as you see in table tennis or badminton or tennis, the other racket sports. So when you're watching from one place as a spectator, you can see that she's making a mistake. Whereas when you're on court, you don't see that, so it's a different kind of thing, and that's also taken a bit of time for me to understand as well. So, I've got I'm not a good squash player, but there are other parents who are good squash players, and actually, there was this instance when we were at the local club, and another person came and said, "Do you want?" Told me if I wanted a match with him, and Aditi was watching me. And she kept telling me that you're playing too much, too many drop shots. And I said, I didn't realize. And she said, see, that's what happens. Because when you're watching from a distance, when you have the whole court to view, your point of view is different. Unlike when you're on court. So, it's also a learning experience for us. So,
Absolutely. So it sounds like you are a coach on site, and when she gets coaching, do you record these matches and then discuss with the
So,
coach?
some matches are live streamed on YouTube.
Okay.
So that's helpful. So we actually download it from YouTube and keep it for otherwise we have got a tripod, so we record important matches. Sometimes a coach is also present, but I haven't had a we haven't we do not have a traveling coach with us. Probably in the future we might want to consider that, but sometimes we record it and send it to them so that they can see it. But some of the European tournaments, especially, they always have live streaming, so it's very good. So the
Interesting.
coaches are watching as she plays, and then they give her advice, or through me actually. So.
All right. So, Ahmed, again, Deepak is planting another way, a question that's coming your way. But you told me you played some organized cricket in India. Was it Saurashtra? So, one, how different was that experience? What Farzad is going through in an organized way for his baseball pursuit, and how has your outlook as a parent changed? What have you learned about baseball? When do you speak less after a tough loss? Because you've already spoken to the coach. The team game slightly different than what Deepak and Aditi are doing. That's more like an individual sport. So what are your learnings if you take your cricket acumen as a starting point?
So I think I will get to answer that question second. I do want to answer a very, very important question as a parent, and it comes to the heart of this podcast and this matter of what is it being a parent. I think Deepak alluded to that in his talking about, you know, how he's evolved as a parent. I think all of us as parents wish the best for our child. There's no question about that. We are their best wishers, well-wishers. We want them to do well. Early on, I didn't get the wonderful insight that every child who's on the field is doing their best. I don't think any child who's there is goofing off. There are a few who goof off. There are times when they goof off that you have to remind them, hey, you got to be serious. You have to listen to your coach, etc. It's really, really important as a parent to recognize that your child is doing their best there. One. Two, it's easy to get involved because you think you can do better than that and they should be doing better than that. No. Step back and think about what they're going through. When they do poorly, they recognize that they are doing poorly for the most part. And then they also recognize that others are watching. So you really should not be rambling it there. I've made that mistake, guilty as charged, several times. But I've evolved from there. The evolution actually happened when someone who's a professional hockey player who got drafted told me about his experience with his father. He said, father never told him this is what went wrong or this is what went right and this is what you should have done. The father, at the end of the game, this is high school, he would sit in the car and said, what do you think happened? Or if he had a particularly bad day, he would just sit there and allow the child to come out with what should have happened, could have happened, must have happened, all of that. I have seen, unfortunately, last year, this was a situation where after losing, we were in the parking lot and the father was yelling at the child, the other team, the team that lost. And then I recognized that I may have been there myself, not to that degree, not to that extent, but I may have been there myself at some point. I think our routine has changed a lot now. Support when it's a bad loss. When there's bad effort, there's going to be some repercussions. But I think both preparation in the morning is about, you know, did you eat your breakfast? How are you feeling? How's your body feeling? Did you get your sleep? After the game, sometimes it's allowing the child to decompress and give them what they think happened. At some stage, they get to a point where they're very good about making an assessment of, oh, this is what I should have done. And they come back and practice and work on it. And they fix it for the most part, right? They need to get better. They recognize that and they will do that. Coming back to, you know, how do you help them with a tough loss? Tough loss is always difficult. So what I emphasize and have learned to emphasize is the process. Don't worry about the outcome. If it's a win or loss, too bad. You're still developing. You're still getting better. Did you get what you need to get as an individual out of this? Did you put in your best effort going into this? Were you best prepared going into this? And most importantly, did you miss out on anything during the game or just in preparation for the game? And sometimes it could be something like not sleeping enough the previous night and your reflexes are not there the next day. So those are the things that we discussed during, before, after the game today. That's me 5-6 years into this journey. The first 2-3 years, I was terrible. I can admit that. There are days when I am terrible now, but I try to be much better now. And I can give some tips and I can get a little hot on some of those tips, but I'm much, much better. That's about, you know, who I am as a parent and what happens during an interaction when it's a good game, bad game, I try to keep it within these boundaries. Talking about myself in school, you know, growing up in the 80s in India, it was not the level of organization there is even today in India. Clubs for cricket, different things, dietitians, strength and conditioning. I don't think it was the same even in the United States at the time, from what I've heard from parents and other athletes. But it is a different level, I think, at this stage. When I was growing up, it was all about the school. You had a school coach, you had the school PT master, physical training master, who would determine whether you were on the team or not. And then the coach would play you depending on how much you needed to be on the team. I did have some additional training, but that was about it. Yes, I played for school in Bangalore. I did represent Saurashtra for the under 15 at the time. But I don't remember talking about nutrition. I don't remember talking about, you know, strength training. I think the idea of strength training was very, 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 very far away from when I was growing up. I don't even remember talking about a gym when I was even a teenager, 18, 19. Now, 14-year-olds are working out with recommendations, with advice, with mentoring, with direction, which is fantastic. It prevents injury, lowers the risk of injury, all of that. But that's a big change in sport. Strength, training, nutrition, sleep, those are aspects of sport that I don't remember spending as much time on.
I mean, yeah. It's interesting. I'm glad Ahmed also said almost the same thing that I did. I think it's an evolution as a parent to get the best out of your child. Sometimes you know, you just have to step back and let them decide what's best. But you know, it's actually I'm glad Ahmed said what he said. So, and I've seen other parents also go through these same journeys. So you know, some days they're really angry. They're more angry than the child sometimes, and I've been guilty as well. And sometimes I just don't understand how Aditi could have played that with that girl. So, and then in an hour's time, you try to reason out. And sometimes the reasons are right. Sometimes the reasoning is just for your self-satisfaction. It might not be even true. So it's like, how could it be that bad? And then there are days when she plays amazingly and you think, why doesn't she do that every time? But then you also think that this is a sport, you know, there's nothing guaranteed. So. Especially, you know, so there are some, like Aditi plays a very high risk squash and it's very attractive when she pulls it off, and obviously not so attractive. And it's a bit like, I wouldn't make the exact comparison, but it's like Kevin Peterson, I suppose, you know, you get the brick pads when it doesn't go off well, and, or basketball, for instance, you know, it's the flavor of the season. So she hits the tin quite a bit because she plays low, but that's her USP as well. She hits the ball harder than almost anyone in the under 15s. But that also comes with the risk because she might hit the tin, you know, the lower part of the squash court. But it all comes with the territory, I suppose. So there are days when she plays amazingly well, and there are days, you know, when you think she could have used, But it's all part of the journey. I've tried to evolve with her. So as she improves, I'm hoping that I'm improving as a parent as well. So.
I think well said. That is the journey, right? I keep falling back as a, you know, I live this as a third party as a fan. You guys are living it firsthand, but even in tennis, there are a lot of parents who, again, and we are talking about global superstars and parents who just don't let go of an athlete. Like Stefanos Tsitsipas is a classic example in the men's game right now. His father has been there from day one, like you both. And there's so much respect and grace in that. But now he's competing for the biggest titles. And a lot of voices in tennis that I've spoken to, some have openly said that, some have privately said that on podcasts or phone calls to other people as well, that he needs to bring in a new voice. His dad has to step away. And again, that's like I hope Farzad and Aditi get to those heights. And then even if you both are a little extra bearing, that would have been a great journey. But at your levels, Deepak, like you said, you evolved, and Ahmed also said the same thing. Was the learning curve steeper because you're playing a sport that you weren't really aware of, and then you're also operating in a system as an expat. Do these things become factors, or there's still a journey between you and your daughter? These are extra factors, but not the main factors?
Not the expat bit. I don't think that's a factor at all. I don't think there's any discrimination or anything like that in the squash sector anyway. Not knowing the sport is a problem, was a problem for me, because most of the kids that are there, they have at least one parent who plays the sport really well. So they can see the problem quicker than I do, and they can fix the problem or tell the coaches the problem quicker than I do. As I said, the first few months in a competitive career, because she was a stronger girl than most, I just told her to whack it. And there were times when her opponents would actually duck because it was coming too fast to them. Because these are, you should see, they're like 10-year-old girls. And if the ball's too fast coming at the face, obviously they get scared and all that. So she won quite a few tournaments under my tutelage, if I can say so, just by smashing the ball. But as she grew through the age group, it wasn't the same. So she had to hone a technique. And it was very revealing when one other parent told me that her backhand was totally wrong. She had a closed backhand as if she was a tennis player, which meant that she was making a lot of errors. Until then, I thought that she had a better backhand than a forehand, because she could really, really thump the backhand. And it really came very natural to her. Until that time, I didn't quite realize that it was that bad. Once the coaching started, obviously, it's more graceful now. So she actually moves like a squash player on court, rather than trying to get the ball off the boundary, I suppose, run with the ball and try and get it. Yeah, so it's actually much, much better now. But not having a squash background is a disadvantage, since neither of us know much about squash, how the technique or anything. We couldn't spot her flaws until she went to the rigors of proper coaching. So that actually set her back a bit. So simple things like, doing a solo, because, squash is a sport that you could practice on your own. You don't actually need an opponent to do some of the drills. So you can actually hit the ball against the wall and hit it again. So she started doing the solos. One of the important skills in squash is actually taking the ball off the backhand corner off the back wall. And I have a poor backhand. So I couldn't really train with her on that. So that's something that she has to do on her own. So if you are trying to do on the forehand, I've got a reasonably good forehand in squash, so I could help her with that. Or some of the other drills where I try and boast, for people that don't know much about squash boast is you hit the side wall first and it goes and hits the front wall before bouncing on the floor. And then Aditi goes forward and hits it back and all that. So some of the drills I can do with her, some like the backhand rails I can't do because I have a poor backhand, which if she had a parent that had a reasonably good backhand, she could have got better much sooner. But she has a coaches. She's playing a lot more. So, and the solo, as we call it, the solo drills are helping. But not having a squash background was a disadvantage.
You're being a little hard on yourself, but I'm sure she'll get there. So. Yeah. So, you said your wife knows, a lot of players of the age group. She, has become her own database when it comes to knowledge. So as a traveling coach, if you go a lot of times to these tournaments, how do you prepare mentally? And secondly, on a Winchester warm-up or practice league, how different is that for you as a coach and a parent when you go to the German Open or travel across different European countries to play competition?
So since she's just moved up to the under 15 age group, this is the down year for her. So there's no pressure. So the German Open, it was a very, very good result for her. She came fourth, and that was a tournament of a great standard. So that was a very, very good result for her. And we've seen that because when she's playing in England, and she most of the girls that she plays against are very good friends with her. There's a bit more pressure to do well against them. It's a sort of friendly competition which is taken seriously. So, the girls are disappointed. Whoever loses, they go to the changing rooms, shed some tears, don't want to talk to each other, etc. But when we go to Europe, because she does, and most English girls don't compete in Europe because, there's a bit of a cost involved, etc. Not everyone like us can work from anywhere. So, we take our laptops and between games, we work on, our daily jobs, et cetera. But not everyone can do that. So mostly when we go to Europe, there are girls from other countries that she's not aware of. So there's no pressure. She just plays the best game. And her results in Europe are actually sometimes much better than what it can be in England because there's additional pressure on her. So again, training, when we go to, say, for Slovenia or Germany, we try and book a court the day on the morning of the day so that she gets accustomed to the atmosphere. All courts are different. Some courts are really cold, especially in winter. Some courts can be really, really cold, and the playing styles can be different. The opponents will try and slow it down because the ball won't bounce as much on a cold court. Whereas, whereas in a warm court, it'll bounce really nicely. One of the things in squash is that, before the start of the game, start of the match, players are warming up, and they're actually warming themselves up as well as the squash ball itself. So squash ball on its own doesn't bounce that much unless you properly hit it, make it warm. So we try and get into try and book we try we usually book a court on the day of the morning of the tournament, get us some solos or hits, or I step into the court and do some drills where I can help. So that's how we prepare. So yeah, and my wife knows. The other thing with the squash is that the scores are all there, so you can go back in history as much as you want. And there's a great thing called squash levels, which is very objective. It is it actually judge it's it actually gives you squash levels, as we call it, on how you've done in a match, in any league match, etc. So everything is recorded. So Aditi is around 730 squash levels. She was 810 before we went on the EJC. She had a pretty poor tournament last weekend, so she slipped to 730. But I think the number one under 15 squash player is in girls is around 4,000 squash levels, so she's got a bit of catching up to do. So we look at all the record. We see if who's beaten who, who's beaten who. But every game's different. But at least you get a basic understanding of where her opponent's standing is. So.
Sure. I have a follow-up on the roadmap for her progress, but let me go back to Emma then ask a question here. So, Emma, recently you and your family took Farzad to Seattle for a baseball evaluation. So you want to talk about what you learned and how's that experience? Does this set the big picture in motion, or is this more like incremental what he needs to do next?
Well, I think that was a dad thing. I've been wanting to take him for, and to that specific lab forever, but he had not turned 14, so he couldn't go there. It was a fascinating trip, on many levels. We have used some of their techniques, we have watched a lot of their videos, but to actually go there and get a full evaluation and say, okay, these are the strengths that you have, these are the weaknesses, this is what you need to work on. What I've recognized is there are a lot of people. Again, let me take this away from him and just talk about my experience as a parent. And coming back to what Deepak said, also, I think this fits in well. Not being a baseball player or having never played baseball or recognized or understood the mechanics of baseball, I think is a disadvantage when the child is younger. But as you get older, you have to recognize at some point that you are unable to coach someone who's playing at that level because they've exceeded what you comprehend, right? So I've been fortunate that he is in a club that does really well. There are many places that, and I really want to use this opportunity to let the parents know that there are places that may not be the best places for your child also. They're just about winning, and then they take your money and they're gone. It's not about the development, especially in team sports. Have to be very, very careful about that because everyone's so eager. This is your only chance, and you really, really have to step back. So this was a place that is very, very reputed, very, very famous. We went there. It was fantastic. What that has given us is a roadmap for how he develops from this 13, 14-year-old middle school teenager into a high school athlete. Big difference. Big difference because 11, 12, 13 is when most kids decide, okay, I don't think I can compete. I'm going to stop. But high school, everyone's really competitive. Everyone's putting in a huge effort. And you have some fantastic athletes who are in the mix. So you have to get your best game, your A game there. So he had a great evaluation. He enjoyed it thoroughly. But then he's come back. He has a roadmap. 5, 6 days a week, he's just worked harder than I've ever seen him work hard, which is wonderful to watch. There are days when, you know, he's not happy with how he's been hitting the whole day. So 10 o'clock at night, he goes to the garage where we set up the net and everything. And he's hitting and he wants me to take videos. It happened last night. We're taking videos and, you know, again, not being a baseball coach, I'm a cricket person. I can tell where the elbow is. I can tell where the head is. I can tell where the weight is. I was able to help some, but we watched videos. We did it in slow motion. Again, technology has been such an important part of this journey too. You can move it frame by frame. You can take slow motion videos. I can't imagine we could have done so much in that 1.5 hours between 9 and 10:30 last night without the aid of technology. I don't think I could have picked up on that. And then I knew what to pick up on. So this whole evaluation, I think, helps give him a blueprint about what he needs to do and very specific targets. So that really helped him focus. And he is so laser focused. It's wonderful to watch that.
It's interesting about the technology. There was this tournament that we played. She played. I say we played because it seems like everyone's playing in the family. So
I totally get that. Totally get that. That's so true.
So it's a tournament we played in Malmo.
No,
in
Deepak,
Sweden.
I would even back you up. There are a lot of professional tennis players when they thank their team. They don't say I did it. They say we did it. So believe me, you can say we played. You are part of the team. Go ahead.
So this tournament in Malmo in Sweden, you could see that she wasn't volleying. In squash, you can actually leave the volley and take the ball late, go to the back wall, and then hit it again. So it's sort of thing that people do sometimes. Some people are better at volleying. Some people are better at taking the ball early. Some people like to take the ball late. But I think this game is a faster game. Her style is faster, so she should be taking the ball early. Now, I said, you know, she doesn't like to watch herself much at all. But that was one time where on the flight back, we watched it, and she knew that she wasn't taking the ball early. And I think in a couple of months, she actually worked on that. Now she's very, very good. And sometimes I think, oh, maybe you could have left that to the back wall, but she's still taking it. So It's a better thing to do, take the ball early, I suppose, with the style of game that she plays, than not take it. So, again, it's all due to technology because she saw herself and then she could see the flaw on her own. And, and the interesting thing is it was not just us. So when we came back, both the coaches actually worked on a wedding because they could also see it. So it was that obvious. But again, because of technology, everyone could see what the fault was. It was a close match that she lost, but everyone was in agreement that she lost because she didn't take the ball early. But again, technology helps there. So.
How is she to open? Sorry, go ahead.
So one of the things that, again, I want to bring attention to, this could be cricket, this could be soccer, this could be any sport. As the season starts, you know, before the season, you're focused, you can do a lot. But once the season starts, the grind of the season, sometimes there could be very subtle changes. And that's where I would encourage parents to think about technology. And it's not very expensive technology when you think about it. It's in your hands and you use it. Because things tend to decay during the course of a season. And it may be, you know, at the end of the season, you're like, okay, what happened? This is not how you started off. And those subtle changes can be tracked when you've, you know, kept some video evidence of how things were when it was ideal beginning of the season and you're like, yeah, this is working really well and you've planned it out. So that is another thing that I would have parents think about in any sport, and I think it works well.
Yeah, totally agree.
So, I mean, we've covered a lot of ground. I'll keep you guys for a couple more questions here because I think we'll get into the crux of it. So before that, Deepak, again, I'll not put a cap on either Aditi or Farzad. I'm sure they should have endless potential in this pursuit. But if you look at a roadmap, how are you planning the next few years? And the larger question is there a UK federation for promising squash talent? And if there is she on some sort of a list? If not, what does she have to do? Because I'm sure this is all, it has time commitment, it has financial strain, and of course you will spend whatever you can on your daughter, but is there any help in terms of talent if she makes the cut? Because I've talked to tennis players in some countries, they don't have a solid tennis federation, and a lot of players give up the sport who can't afford it. So talk about the logistics and, you know, what do you have planned for her in the next couple of years, depending on her progress?
So we have the England squash, and England squash are very good at organizing tournaments. I think we have tournaments of a good standard in the junior area compared to any other European country. We have got lots of tournaments, lots of players coming in. There's a good mix of juniors that play. I think we also see that in junior tournaments, like the British Open, lots of Egyptians, Pakistanis, and Indians come, and they actually outplay our juniors here. And that's because obviously they are spending a lot of money to come, so they must obviously be very good. So it's usually the Egyptians that win. The Pakistani won the British Open last year. They are all very good. I think, but the England squash do arrange a lot of matches, so that is really helpful. They don't actually pay for anything when we go to Europe. There was one of the things that we don't even. So when we go to Europe, for instance, when Aditi played the German Open semifinal on an all glass court, her first and only experience in an all glass court. So she was playing a Dane, and she had like 15 other Danes cheering for her, whereas we had just me, my wife, and another English girl's parent cheering for Aditi. So there was not much support that way, but they do arrange a lot of tournaments. And once you make the cut, I think they if you get into the English team, there's like the top three girls in an age group. I think they give you some special training, etc. And Aditi is also in something called the bridging squad, where she's not in the elite group, but she's not in the it's like the middle class, I suppose. So that's a free training session. But what I've seen with Aditi is that she doesn't do too well in group training sessions. I think it's mostly she goes for just to catch up with her friends, I suppose. So, and she doesn't actually learn much. So we go there because she enjoys it, but she gets most of her training done in our own expense. So, which is not a burden. I mean, squash is not that expensive compared to some of the other sports. The squash courts are quite cheap to hire. We are members in three clubs, so we've got full access to squash courts in all the three clubs, actually four clubs. So it's not that expensive. England squash do help where they can, but the best help that they can give us is actually organizing tournaments throughout the year, which is great help compared to some of the other European countries where they don't have as many tournaments. Forget European countries. Even the Welsh don't do as many tournaments as the English or even the Scots. So they all come here and play. And the Welsh parents are always saying that they don't even... they're always complaining about the lack of tournaments in Wales, for instance. But talking about... she's actually got sponsorship this year so that sort of eases the burden. So she gets three pairs of shoes, three rackets from a company called Caracal. It's a Belgian company. Saki, you might have heard of them. They also do some tennis equipment. Mm-hmm. So she's got sponsorship through them for this year. So hopefully she can get it renewed next year, keep up her performances. But it's not an expensive sport. It's only expensive when you travel abroad. But as I said, we are lucky in that sense that we can work from abroad. So in between squash matches, you can just catch up on work. And both our employers are quite understanding in that respect.
Yeah, good to know. Yeah, this is I didn't know where squash fell in the landscape of UK sporting system, and definitely junior trail of it. So it's definitely quite the enlightening conversation. So Ahmed, I'll bring you in the same expat question I asked Deepak a few questions ago. Again, from far, from a very distant far, we all read about how, you know, Southeast, you know, South Asians, you know, like ourselves, Indians, Pakistanis predominantly, we may be more represented in the school level, say, for baseball compared to basketball and football. Is that something you've noticed, given Farzad also plays basketball? Have you seen many Desi kids in your journey so far across the Northeast pitch or play baseball compared to, say, basketball or football, if you have any visibility?
Well, at least at the level he's playing, there's very few of them that are competitive or are on competitive teams. So there's maybe two or three. One of them happens to be on, you know, from the same town and on a different team with the same club, but very few people that I have seen. Baseball has a history and reputation for being a time sink because of, you know, the length of the games, the lack practices, etc. So a lot of parents are wary of getting their kids into baseball even at 6 and 7 years old. They said, oh, why did you get them into baseball? That's a lot of time. That's one part of it. The other thing about baseball I've recognized is that you cannot start baseball at age 10 or 12 or 13. You know, you should have started much earlier. We almost didn't start him in baseball. It was almost an accident. It was almost, I don't know, the system that took over, I guess. So I would think that a part of it is, yes, I think on the math side, when we go to the math competitions, you see a lot of the South Asian parents who are represented really well there. But on the baseball side, not so much. I think it's the effort and the commitment that it takes on the child's part that may sometimes distract from the academics, that may say, that the parents say, okay, no, we're not doing this, you know, at 13, 14 in high school. You do see some kids who are in the little league, 11, 12, up until there, you see quite a few kids who are playing, competing, doing reasonably well. And that seems to be a drop-off after that. It's true that in terms of skills, baseball and basketball are very different. But it also is important to recognize that when there is a lot of practice over time, they do get better to some extent. But beyond that, there is something to be said about athletic ability that takes over. I don't think you can overcome that at any time.
Hmm. Another follow-up is what Deepak was just talking about, squash's place in the UK sporting system. So if Farzad continues to play baseball, and or any young man his age, any child, so are there federation... is there a federation intervention where you can get a baseball scholarship, or is mostly expenses that are taken over by parents and continues in statewide travel and whatever the roadmap is? So if someone is good, are they taken up by an academy or a federation? Say, okay, there's potential and so we'll take on from now, or those options don't exist for baseball?
I don't believe they do exist for baseball. It's mostly, at least through high school, the parents are going to support, fund. I understand there are some high schools that have a better program than others, but he's fortunate that he's in a very good program. But in terms of college scholarships, etc., from what I've heard from other parents, I keep telling for the day he stops enjoying sport, for what it is, and it becomes work, and he's working towards a scholarship, I think we can call it quits, because it's really important for him to enjoy it. Otherwise, it becomes work, and I don't want him to ever make it work. I have come to a point in the last year or two where if he says tomorrow that he's done playing, I would say, yep, It has been great fun. I enjoyed it every minute. It was a lot of time we spent well together, sometimes fighting, sometimes not so much. But it was a good journey. So I am willing to say, yes, if this is no fun, if this is the end, I'm happy with where we've come. But if he wants to continue further, it's going to be 1 week at a time, 1 month at a time, 1 season at a time, and then we'll take it how it goes.
And that's a brilliant take. So I'm going to bring Deepak in. It's the same question for both of you. Again, like I said, I wish the best for both these kids, and hopefully we can have this conversation again when they are progressing even faster. But Deepak, first you, have you had this conversation with yourself? And if there's a point, like when you say, okay, you know, we've had a good run, sports demands so much, Aditi, we are proud of you. Okay, first, have you had the conversation with yourself? Are you selling as an end goal here? And, you know, when do you bring that up to her? If it also comes to a point where the choice has to be made between academics and maybe it's not a fair question, but I'm just asking a difficult question. Have you set a ceiling as a parent for yourself?
There's two things here. So for me, I just wanted her to play sport. I think playing any sport makes anyone a better person. It's just great that she's playing sport. I haven't thought whether she's going to stop playing or not. It's interesting that, my wife actually watches a lot of squash. She watches a lot of PSA stuff. I don't watch a lot of squash, but she does. So I think she, more than me, wants her to do much better in squash than she is right now. So she's the one that's actually pushing her. Whereas I am more of a facilitator. I think I just go on court, play with her. I actually want her to do well, but my wife's the actual driving force, I think. I don't know if she's had the conversation with Aditi yet or what, but I'm quite happy where she is. I'm just glad that she's actually playing a sport and she's playing quite well. She's playing it competitively. Everyone in the squash circuit knows her. She's quite popular in school because of the sport she plays. So that's already a big achievement for me. But academically, she's doing all right. And like any Desi parent will tell you, it will stop if she does terribly academically. So it's all good. And she knows that. So, but she's doing very well academically. It's also interesting because you both are from Mass. I think she is the British number one, Georgina Kennedy. She actually got a scholarship with Harvard because of squash. So lots of Egyptians actually pick up squash because they say it's a ticket out of the country. They come and study here or in America. Lots of squash scholarships in the Ivy League. So it's interesting. Not that I'm thinking that far, but I know at least a couple of girls, including Georgina Kennedy, that have taken up Ivy League scholarships through the squash.
No, more power to her. Hopefully you make the trip across the pond. Yeah. So Ahmed, same question. I mean, looks like you have this roadmap, like you said in the previous response, the day he stops having fun. But at the same time, if the potential is, you know, even beyond what you imagine. So again, college sports in America are the pathway to pro sports. But if he is one of those guys who's blessed to go a little further, at what point do you have a balancing conversation? Does academics take a backseat maybe for the interim, or you think you've mapped it out that both can coexist if he were to really keep going further?
I don't know. I want to get through high school first. And I've told him that I will pay for his college and I'm putting aside money for his college. It's not something that I'm trying to get him to get a scholarship so I don't have to pay for it. And it's not a plan A or plan B. Plan A is, and the only plan so far, is that he will go to college and I will pay for that. Whether he goes to the right college to play baseball a certain way, I don't know. That's too far away. He has to make the high school team sometime in the next year or two. And I say year or two because as a ninth grader, to make the high school team is sometimes hard, especially in baseball. Very few do, depending on how competitive the high school team is. But hopefully by, you know, sophomore, junior year, he should be making the high school varsity team. If he does do that, great. That's step one towards a college career. But again, college sport is not easy. It is a full-time job. You're working in the gym 2-3 hours a day. You're training. It's a lot of work, and people have been burnt out way before that. I don't want him to get burnt out, and that's why I allow him to pace his practices and his schedules and all of that. I think it's important for him to stay fresh. And there's going to be, ups and downs through the career, ups and downs through his training, ups and downs through how he feels. But my job as a parent, again, this is about what my role as a parent is to let him know that he is going to have a normal, natural course like any other child would expect to have, which is I am going to college and my parents will help me get through college. Now, if baseball comes in the way and he gets a nice, juicy scholarship, I'm totally happy. It's a bonus. It's not plan A.
Right, it looks like you both have it mapped out and you're living it day to day. So my question is a bit premature, but I had to get it out there and wish you both the best. So now I'm going to cap this conversation off with a generic question. This may apply to Deepak more, but in societal terms, Ahmed, it also applies to you and me, but I don't have a horse in the race. So as expats and who have, set this sporting journey for their respective kids in motion, you're learning a new aspect of society that that me and some others don't, because we are not going, we are not meeting similar, parents who are like pursuing a sporting, not dream, but a sporting journey for their kids. So Deepak, so does it help assimilate better in the mainstream subconsciously? I know it's kind of a tough question to ask, but you also have England and India play test cricket. So by Aditi's journey, do you learn more about your role as a, as a citizen of England? Because if you were just doing your job and meeting your friends and she didn't take up the sport, the paths could have been slightly different. And Ahmed, we don't have to pass that litmus test because India doesn't come here and play the Yankees or the Red Sox. But the question still remains. So Deepak, you can go first, and then we can cap it off with Ahmed wrapping the answer.
Let me answer this. So squash is an individual sport. So you actually, Anahat Singh, who is, I think she's 14, and she's one of the best players. She's 15, I think. She's from India. I think she won the under-17 British Open this year. And her coach was James Wilstrop, who is a former world number one. He's from England. I think he's still active. He's like Jimmy Anderson. He's not going to retire soon, but he's very fit. But her coach was James Wilstrop. And when her match was on, Anahat Singh's match was on, it was crowded. The court was crowded. Everyone is watching. So I think the English society is not as much as the nationalistic society. So, I know there's a Tibet test and all that, but I still support India. I think my daughter, I don't know, I've not asked her. She's not much of a sports watcher. I don't know if she has a favorite team. But in terms of assimilation, I think the squash has the squash society has got a pretty good mix, like a typical English society, I suppose. These days, especially in big cities where it's all quite mixed now, so you don't feel out of place anyway. So you just go so it's just there. So I haven't felt a difference, positively or negatively. It's just life as usual. Aditi's got friends that are third generation Indians or second generation Pakistanis. We have lunches and dinners with the parents of second generation Indians. It's quite normal for us. It's not come up that. Which national team is supposed, because I suppose with Commonwealth Games also gone now, so I don't know if there's a, I mean, there is the, obviously the team competitions, but who cares about who wins the Davis Cup, I suppose. It's been all right. I mean, I haven't noticed a difference either, positively or negatively. I do know that Aditi feels, I don't know if she feels strongly about her nationhood or anything, but I think it's just the society that she is, a friendship that she has, and it's not as nationalistic as as in some place else. Positive. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. So it's just it just carry on as usual.
Amit?
So I think the first thing I have to say is we've seen so many places that I would never have imagined going to if I hadn't gone there as a parent who's taking my child to a baseball game. Not only in terms of grounds and towns, but also in terms of, different markets and different restaurants and different states even. that's one aspect of it. I think that's exposed us to different parts of the geography itself. But the other aspect is, yes, it's not a group that I would typically socialize with if I was not a baseball parent. I think that opens up a lot of insights into how you have parents who are so invested in athletics, who are so invested in different sports, that as a South Asian, I don't think I would have ever seen that or recognized that or even fathomed. Honestly, sometimes I'm like, what do you mean you're missing school to go there? And that is not a thought that I could ever, ever come across if I was not a part of this group. The other thing that I think also helps me is that having a South Asian's a South Asian perspective, an immigrant perspective, to something where this is a very historic, traditional sport. Again, in terms of, that immigrant South Asian need to, excel and do better. And first generation immigrant, especially, do better. And now you can get better. I think that energy is helpful, whether as a parent, as a parent of a child who's interested in a sport. I'm pushing harder and harder to get the best for him, which I think is a new perspective. But in terms of assimilating, I don't know if I would use the word assimilating. I think I've expanded my group of friends. I've expanded my child's group of friends beyond what we would ordinarily have socialized with. That's true.
Oh, well said, both of you. I think it's also the way you both have interjected yourself and your respective societies through the prism of sport. It also probably enriches the other parents subconsciously who know more about the journeys of Aditi and Farzad respectively, but also your families. I guess sport is a beautiful thing. It sounds like a cliche, but it kind of bridges a lot of gaps. So
it does. It does indeed, because there's some parents who are actually quite interested to know how much we put, how much Aditi does well academically as well as in sport, because I don't think academics is stressed as much as in South Asian communities as in some other communities. So it's an interesting conversation always that way.
Nice. On that note, thank you both of you to do this on a Sunday. We've talked about put this place a few weeks ago, and today here we are. I got everything I wanted from this conversation. Any parting comments you want to make before we wrap the show?
No, Saqib, thanks for this opportunity. It's an honor to be on this board.
Thank you, Saqib. It was enjoyable. I think this is a unique perspective, and like anything you do on your podcast, these are perspectives that are not typically seen by most sports fans. I want to end with one line that a friend of mine, again, his son is also a very good squash player in India. He said, "I'm the number one fan. I'm his number one fan." And I think as all parents, we are the number one fans.
True that.
There you go. So you have my endorsement too. So definitely, I had like most fun recording this. Everything expected of this conversation is kind of a deep insight with full of insights on your respective journey. So hopefully the fans of Cricket with an Accent, the listeners, take a leap out of this. And like I said, it's no dissimilar than a cricketing parent's journey somewhere. We'll be back with other episodes later in the year. Thank you for listening. And yeah, I never do that. So no matter what platform you're listening on, should have said this 100 episodes ago, please give us a rating, a good one, hopefully, and also write a review so we can get discovered more organically to someone who's not on Twitter or who's not on my social radar. Yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon. Talk later. Bye.